today or later. If you're here for 3363 or HJM 33, we'll slip those until next week. And we will open a public hearing for purposes of taking testimony on redistricting. Nobody signed up. Committee, we've got a couple letters for your file.
And then it's over here. You know.
Anybody here that want to talk about redistricting? Nick? Close that public hearing and open up work session on Senate Bill 965. I'll get those to you later here. Senator Starr and Cindy. Committee of Dash 10s, what you should have in front of you. And only Dash 10s, right? Yeah, and only. Yeah, and only. Along with those 3,000 messages they know. This isn't your father's 965, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Your father's? This is the father.
Chair Harper, members of the committee, I'm Senator Charles Starr, representing Senate District 5 in Western Washington County. When we last appeared on this bill, I came in opposed to the bill, had several objections, which you very courteously heard. And since that time, I've worked extremely well with a number of individuals, but particularly with the Senate Majority Office to bring forth some modifications that solved most all of the problems that I had with the bill initially. This bill addresses statute adopted, I believe, first in 1993. And I've got a long list of sections which I have worked on in bringing amendments, but I think suffice to say that, unless you want to hear the detail, that we have made it very clear that this is a voluntary program, that they do the assessment with written consent of those assessed, that they do provide services with the written consent of those being provided services, that they allow withdrawal from the program without any, I believe what the bill says, without any adverse effect to the person who withdraws. They've provided in Section 18, allows for discipline to be granted or to be taken if any agent of the Healthy Start or administrators of its programs who violate federal or state law concerning Healthy Start, that is, people who violate statute in their delivery of services, would be, by administrative rule, subject to discipline. I believe that the bill provides safeguards to individuals who had concerns about the bill as I did. I believe that it is provides direction in the statute then for implementation of the program, which is carried out with state oversight by local commissions, and that it will work to provide important services to children and families who need help. And therefore, I am supporting the bill as amended by the Dash 10 amendments. And Cindy, I believe, can tell us why the Dash 10s were necessary. I believe it's a small change, but I think for the clear reading of the bill, that change was absolutely important.
Thank you, Senator.
Cindy Hunt, Legislative Counsel's Office. The only change from the dash 10s from the dash 9s is on page 16, line 10, and the dash 9s used to talk about poor children and families' outcomes, whereas the dash 10s talk about with poor outcomes for children. So it's the poor outcomes, not the poor children. That's the only change from the 9s to the 10s. So,
Mr. Chairman,
unless the committee would like me to go through the 10s with more detail.
You'll never believe this, but the advance copy I got on the 9, I actually highlighted that poor children thing, and I wanted to know how you were defining them, and thought that was a little bit insensitive.
Taken care of.
I'm glad to hear it's just a technical scribble.
Aren't we hot?
I'm just a...
Yeah.
I'm on top of it, buddy.
Center fire.
I learned it from Courtney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Cindy, I'm looking at page 14, section 12B. When we heard testimony, we heard a lot of people talking about I think they call it the Together with Children program. And I believe that this amendment is one that was requested by Senator Carno Castillo and I. I just want to check. I'm not real close to these programs, but in the original bill, it seems like the enabling statute for that program was eliminated. Did it get put back, or is it still eliminated?
Senator Beyer, Chair Harper, I think what you're referring to is there is a statute over in the education laws, mm-hmm. I think it's ORS 329-180, and that talks about parents as teachers programs,
mm-hmm.
and that is still repealed and references to that, or the bill takes them out. However, in Section 12B that you're seeing on page 14, this was added in, and this section was not in the original 965. Mm-hmm. And what this section is doing is placing this program underneath the state commission as opposed to over in the education statutes. And it's also directing the state commission that they need to support these programs statewide, whereas before I think the programs were only in, I want to say, 3 counties. And also tying the programs into the local coordinated comprehensive plan, and treating the programs very similarly as the relief nurseries are treated and some of the other individual programs.
So how do we, I mean, we've got 3 very good programs. How do we assure that we don't lose those?
Senator Beyer, Chair Harper.
Each commission, each local commission, right?
Yeah, that's a decision for the local commission. I mean, as far as what programs that they're going to have. But I'm not sure that I'm the one that can assure you.
It's going to be the local decision based upon the makeup of, you know, everybody. That's the way I read it. Yeah.
I guess it's a funding question, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. As I understand these, the relief nurseries and these programs were statewide programs that had been funded in the past through the state commission. And understandably, the local commissions didn't see these as something they had to fund. As we migrate from that kind of a system to the one proposed here, I guess that's the question, is are we going to lose those, or will other programs that have established themselves locally sort of push those out of the way?
Senator Beyer, Chair Harper, I think the answer is it'll depend on that individual community and the decisions that they're making through their local plan and which programs that they see that they want in their communities to address their needs.
Will the communities end up getting more money under this? I mean, an equivalent amount of additional money that they could be expected to do?
The way that I understand it, this is policy. This is if you do these programs, they'll be done in accordance with this. The funding is up. That's completely separate. That's downstairs at the moment. How much money goes out to the commissions to do whatever programs the local people want to do are going to be defined like that. We're not into that one. Isn't that right? I'm getting head nods. So it's kind of separate, related obviously, but separate. So all the testimony we had from the parents as teachers that's back in here. That was stripped out, I think inadvertently from what I thought I heard, but that's back in there. Whether they do it or not is back to the local decision, and at a funding level that's coming out of the budget talks of which we're engaging right now. It's just my read. Okay.
Senator Courtney's been
waiting. Senator Courtney?
Oh, yes. Thank you for your testimony, Senator Starr. Thank you, Cindy, for all the work you've done on this. I'm going to go back to one of my questions that the chair laughed at me about. Is there a clerk of the works in here? Well, just a clerk of the works, which that's an East Coast thing, I guess. A single agency or oversight, and it may not be. There may not be. There's so many groups and organizations and levels of government involved. Is there a clerk of the works? That means sort of a captain of the team or a player coach, you know, any kind of thing you can identify with. You know what I'm saying? Supreme Bean.
Different bill. Senator Courtney, Chair Harper. The state responsibility for planning and coordination is specifically at the State Commission, the Department of Ed, and the Department of Human Services jointly.
So all power and authority emanates from that?
That, and then at the local level, the local commissions are coordinating and leading the process. But it's at the state level that those three agencies are setting policy, doing technical assistance, training, coordinating programs, that kind of thing.
State commission and local commissions.
Right.
That's a clerk of the works.
But also related to your question, individual programs, for example, there's individual education programs for which the State Board of Education adopts rules, pre-kindergarten being one of those. This bill says that those programs need to be coordinated with other programs, but it doesn't take away that rulemaking authority, for example, from the State Board of Ed.
Thank you.
Fair enough.
I've got a couple of questions. Actually, I think Senator Courtney's question is a very important question, because none of this stuff happens without a cheerleader or somebody out there who's really making it come together and drawing people together for the purpose of discussion and assuring that programs are, in fact, doing what we're asking them to do. And I think having some previous discussions about the things that we created in 1993 and where we are today, it's clear to me that we're all over the map. We really don't know where we are. But now to my question. The bill talks in its preamble about the first 3 years of life being crucial, and then goes on to talk about brain development. Now, having someone provided a copy of a book to me called The Myth of Birth to 3 years of age, or something, whatever it is, talking about the importance of brain development and birth to 3 years of age. And in essence, the book suggests that it's not just limited to birth to three. And then as I'm reading through the language of the bill, it talks about zero to eight. So there seems to be an inconsistency there. It's kind of like, are we talking about birth to three being that critical stage where brain development is, you know, so significant that everything has to happen in birth to three? Or is it really talking zero to eight? So it's kind of like, which is it? It seems to me that, you know, the book that I read seemed to talk about brain development being important from birth on up through the teens and actually on into your latter years as a senior citizen, because we know, according to brain search, that neurons continue to grow and increase, but not at the same rate, and so on and so forth. So it seems to me that the bill should be consistent. It should talk about zero to eight as opposed to just birth to three, because that kind of leads us back into that trap of you know, the birth to three thing being the preeminent area of life we're talking about. That's a statement, not necessarily a question, but I think it's an important one in terms of consistency. Second thing is, when we talk about zero to three, what does zero mean? This is an is question, but it's an important one.
Average IQ of the legislature?
Perhaps. Room temperature. Well, and I'm asking the question because I'm leading you down a path here.
I'm sure you are.
I don't.
I sure you are.
Yeah. So we may not have the correct witnesses. Who wants to leap up into this fray?
And I'll ask the question about in utero, the care of a child in utero. And I use the term child as opposed to fetus.
We got the commission.
That is.
Thank you.
in this interrogation room, bright lights are blazing down.
Mr. Chair, I'm Donna.
Have your lawyer.
No, I don't have him with me today. I'm Donna Middleton. I'm Director of the State Commission on Children and Families. Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis, zero means prenatal, and before birth.
It does mean before.
Yes, it does.
So why don't we say before birth? Prenatal.
Well, you know, we've toyed with that, using prenatal, using zero. I think that they settled on zero, but it could have been any number of different definitions.
Too many red flags. Okay, but for the record, it means
prenatal.
Prenatal. Thank you. Another question. On page 18, there's a directive here that each Healthy Start Family Service Support Service Program shall adopt disciplinary procedures for family support workers and nurses. The question is, nurses have oversight through the Nurse Practices Act, the Board of Nursing, so on and so mm-hmm. forth. I want to make sure for the record that we're not creating a separate disciplinary procedure different than what exists under the Nurse Practices Act.
No. Senator Harper, Senator Minnis, we are not. As a matter of fact, we're going to use all the current disciplinary actions that counties, the state, and the Board of Nursing has for these kinds of service delivery systems.
So, again, Mr. Chairman, why don't we say that?
This was the agreed-upon language.
Okay. For the record, I...
But for the record. Okay, good. Thank you. Senator Brown.
Since we have a witness who can answer specific questions, Section 14, sub 7, what is that trying to accomplish different than what Healthy Start should be doing anyway?
14, sub 7.
I'm getting there. I'm getting there. 18. In terms of what's happening now.
Excuse me, Senator Brown, which section?
14 sub 7.
Which page?
18. At least I have on the amendment, the dash A10 amendment.
Senator Brown, the disciplinary procedures.
Mm-hmm. I'll follow up on Senator Minnis.
Oh, I see. They are, as in all programs, there is progressive discipline for any support worker or nurse that violates the confidentiality of a family.
And Mr. Chair, I know that there are a couple of bills in the House that would deal with prenatal care, providing more prenatal care to women. My recollection is that the issue with those bills is that we are choosing not to spend the dollars to fund those programs. Is that your understanding, that we do have bills out there to address the prenatal care for the women in the state that are not receiving it, but that the fiscal is too high?
Senator Harper, Senator Brown, I am not familiar with those particular pieces of legislation, but that is the information that I have.
Yes, Senator Courtney.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Council Hunt, is it on page 15, basically lines 20 through 31, that this program is in detail and very specific language, made voluntary. That was a big issue, as you recall, but we got clobbered and hammered over the fact that a lot of people felt, mm-hmm. despite what was in the original 965, what's in 965 mm-hmm. before the amendment, it wasn't a voluntary program. It was going to be mandated. And so that was a big issue. Have you added additional language to guarantee, to show that it truly is a voluntary program? And is that language on 15? Are there other? Is that it?
Correct. It's also in other places. Senator Courtney, Chair Harper, the language, Senator Courtney, that you pointed to, that is added in here. That wasn't in the original bill. Okay. That was some of the language that Senator Starr was mm-hmm. referring to later that was worked on with him.
Okay.
To make it clear mm-hmm. that it's, you know, at the express written consent from the family and that these services are voluntary.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. The other place that was altered to make it clear is on page 5 of the bill, lines 18 to 27. And this is also talking about, so this is in section 5, which talks about all of the programs, not just Healthy Start. and it's saying that information gathered in conjunction, you see there, with the voluntary comprehensive screening and assessment may be used only for the following purposes, and it lays those out. To understand there was a concern about confidentiality and the use of information.
And that was another one of those big issues, was the data.
Mm-hmm.
And it, this is in this section, and I see it's repeated once or twice.
Correct.
In other places. So
correct.
The data, so it's a good pin on that. So that was another big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay.
Work session.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash A-10 amendments to Senate Bill 965.
The dash 10.
The dash 10. So the A-10, it's an error. It could be corrected through L-2.
Excuse me.
The 10.
I've just been told I made a bad motion. I withdraw it. I move the dash 10 amendments to Senate Bill 965.
Senator Courtney moves the dash 10s to 965. Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I guess I would like to have some discussion about the inconsistency in the preamble between birth to 3 and 0 to 8.
What more do we want to do?
Well,
just that there is an inconsistency. Is this something we want to take a good hard look at when we get it across?
Yeah, I think maybe I'll note it for the record here. It's important to me that we, whatever we're doing here, we're doing predicated upon current brain research, as opposed to some other, idea that somehow this birth to 3 is the only period in which we can have influence in a person's life in terms of brain development. I think that's the disagreement among researchers is that some people believe that this birth to 3 period is the only period in which you have this opportunity to change the potential social response of these kids. And other research is saying, no, that's not true. In fact, you have the capacity to influence these. It's important, but you also have the ability to influence in later years also. So.
Yeah, I think that's so noted. Take a look. There's reference to research in the risk factors in here about using research. But further discussion on dash 10s. Objections? Okay, hearing none, so
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 965 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
And Senator Courtney moves Senate Bill 965 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection. Senator Atkinson objects. Anybody else okay? Mm-hmm. All right. The order. And Senator Starr, would you carry this for us? All right. Work session closed. Thank you very much. No. We're not making him do anything else. Work session. House Bill 2145. I'll check with him and see her, but I don't. Okay, let's do that.
It's called signal.
Yeah. All right, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, Chair Harper, members of the
mayor, man.
Yep. My name is Al Leitner, for the record, with the Department of Transportation. I've submitted a more detailed testimony for the record in your review, and I have about a one-minute summary. Hopefully that'll fit. This bill deals with cleaning up some statutory language about billboards and makes Oregon's billboard control program more effective.
This is the only signed bill, for Senator Courtney, is it?
What bill is it? I remember this bill.
It replaces the criminal penalty for illegal sign installations with a civil penalty. It allows injunctive relief for repeat illegal sign offenders. It clarifies information required for administrative hearings about signs. It allows brush cutting in the right-of-way under Highway Division permit. The bill is supported by the sign industry. It passed the House on a 51-1 vote. I urge your support and a due pass on this bill, and thank you. And if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Senator Courtney.
I move House Bill 2145 and go to Senate for a due pass.
I have a question.
Senator Atkinson.
In Southern Oregon, we have a couple of rogue sign operators that throw signs up to say things.
Like vote for Atkinson?
Like.
He's good today, isn't he?
Yeah.
What's your dog?
actually say things pretty offensive, like the Pope is the Antichrist, things like that. And it's been called into question whether or not those signs were put up using the proper channels. Does this get at that?
Chair Harper, Senator Atkinson, it does. The rogue operator that you're talking about has perhaps 24 or more signs around the state that all are operating without permit. Most of them have commercial advertising on them that would be subject to this bill. If a person puts up something under a free speech statement, you get into a little stickier territory, but the sign structure typically is not generating revenue, and therefore those signs are very few, and they eventually go away.
Thank you.
Okay. Would that get your question?
Done.
Okay. Do we have a motion?
I moved it.
Okay.
The floor.
Any other discussion? Objection. Hearing none. The order. You want this one again?
Yeah, sure.
Senator Courtney would like to do this again. Close work session, open work session. House Bill 2204. Bob Repine. Repine.
The only one that signed up, sir.
One more. Mr. Chairman, committee members, for the record, I am Bob Repine, Director of Oregon Housing and Community Services. You have in front of you House Bill 2204, and if I'm not mistaken, there are some dash amendments that are going with it. They would be the...
Four.
You have an A gross version, and you have a dash A4 proposed amendments. Is that correct, staff person?
We've got some fours, yeah.
Okay. They're A4s.
It's behind the
SA. A4s. Briefly, Mr. Chairman and committee members, the attempt of this bill is to provide a more predictable and fair method of property tax assessment, recognizing the unique aspects of low-income housing. This bill has, the issue has been worked by a strong group of individuals for a very long period of time, which are included of the bankers, the assessors, county assessors, local government representatives, the Department of Revenue, Justice Department, and Housing Community Services, and fee appraisers. And what we're trying to do is create some opportunity through a, if you would consider it a safe harbor, where assessments dealing with the properties of low-income Oregonians would provide that more predictable opportunity of method of property assessments. Currently, there has been some disparity in the state geographically because assessors have a tendency to look at these things differently. And so what this is an agreement where it works prospectively. It doesn't work in existing properties, so it would prospectively affect properties to make
sure. What are these amendments? Why didn't you get this fixed?
Mr. Chairman, these amendments were post the House committee. Representative Shetterly, in passing the bill, realized there was a couple of things that still needed some cleanup, but in order to keep the bill moving, he had asked the bill to be moved out of his committee, do some cleanup versions of which we've run these past him to deal with those little minute tweaks that became apparent at his hearing. And so
everybody is on board.
Everybody who I've mentioned has supported those amendments that are in front of you.
All right, Senator Courtney.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2204A amended. No, no. Mr. Chair, I move the dash four amendments.
A4.
To House Bill 2204.
Got the system down there, right? Senator Courtney moves the A4 to House Bill 2204. Further discussion, objection, hearing none.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2204 as amended to the Senate floor with due pass recommendation.
And accordingly, moves House Bill 2204 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion, objection, hearing none, ordered. Let's see, Senator Beyer, if you'd be so kind.
Four.
Close work session, open work session. House Bill 2817. Yeah, you guys writing is terrible. Russell? Who's this other guy?
Sounds like.
Dalport?
Delponic.
Oh. Yeah, what's the task force? Yeah, task force doesn't cost anything.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Russell. I'm Director of Government Affairs for the Oregon Trucking Associations. This is really a fairly simple bill. It's very different, however, than what it started out as. What it is today is it sets up a task force to deal with the problem of persons transporting household goods illegally. There are several different members, a broad spectrum of folks that would participate in the task force. There is no fiscal impact. ODOT is going to do this task force within its existing resources, and there's no opposition to the bill.
Well, so ODOT has all this extra money, huh?
We don't anticipate that it's going to cost a lot of money.
Why do you need a task force? Why don't you just go do it?
Mr. Chairman, the original bill tried to just do it, and there was some opposition to that, and we weren't able to solve all of that, so we thought we would spend some time in the interim and come to some sort of an agreement.
Okay. Senator Courtney.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2817 is amended to the Senate floor to pass recommendation.
Any further discussion? And ODOT's fine with this, obviously. Yeah, we talked okay about things. All right, further discussion, objection, hearing none, so order. Senator Atkinson.
Giddy up.
Closed work session, open work session, House Bill 3411. See you guys again, or?
We did this.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, again for the record, my name is Bob Russell, Director of Government Affairs for the Oregon Trucking Associations, and this is an example of an interim task force that worked. Essentially what happened is the Department of Transportation and the trucking industry sat down to see if there were any ways that we could improve or simplify the weight mile tax. And to the surprise of many, we actually came up with some ways that we could do that. In this bill, there are really three things that it does. Right now, Oregon is the only state that requires a unique license plate for trucking companies that are located in other states. This would eliminate that plate and replace it with the license plate that's issued by the trucking company's home state. And this wasn't possible in the past because of a limitation in ODOT's computer system. However, with the Y2K reprogramming, they now have fields that are large enough so that they can accommodate other states' license plate numbers, and there won't be any diminution of their ability to track trucks and enforce the weight distance tax requirements. Second thing it does is it expands the use of quarterly reporting. Today, if your weight mile tax liability is over $3,600 a year, you cannot report quarterly. You must report monthly. What that really does is penalizes some of the better trucking companies, the more responsible ones. What this provision does, it allows ODOT, with their approval, to allow a trucking company to report quarterly irrespective of their annual tax liability. But they have to have a good payment record and maintain that record to continue to use the quarterly reporting. The third thing the bill does is it changes the new carrier education program. In the past, the industry had insisted that we have all new entrants into the trucking industry go through a one-day class so that they understood all of the various requirements attendant to trucking. That program has not worked out as well as we had hoped. There was actually a new program at the Marine Board where they've provided a manual and a pencil and paper test to people that want to buy a boat. And we thought that was such a good idea that that's the intent of this provision. It would allow ODOT to develop such a manual with a pencil and paper test. New applicants into the trucking industry would be expected to read the manual and demonstrate their knowledge of the regulations through the test. So we think that's a good positive thing. That's all the bill does. There is nothing but support for the bill, no opposition whatsoever. We would urge your passage.
Bob, lots of discussion of some pretty cosmic ways to do this in the future. What's the status of that? Are you transponders and this and that? So just quickly, you got 30
sure.
seconds.
When we're talking transponders, those are in existence today and used today in Oregon and a number of states. Unfortunately, that type of technology does not lend itself well to weight mile tax reporting. Mm. There is technology in existence that does, and that would be satellite-based transmissions with a GPS, onboard computer, and an onboard scale on the truck. You tie all that together through the onboard computer, and you can, you know, the weight of the truck, you know, the miles of travel, routes, all of that stuff, and you could convert that fairly easily into a weight mile tax report. Unfortunately, that technology today is prohibitively expensive.
Yeah.
If we were to use that, and the cost of using the technology would exceed the amount of tax we pay. So it's not practical at this point in time.
And Greg, we're just continuing to look, I assume, in this whole system to...
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Greg Delfani, Deputy Director of Motor Carrier Division, ODOT. That's correct. We're working under the banner of the Department of Administrative Services and their e-commerce, e-government initiatives, seeking technological advances.
And the officials on this, everybody's happy with where they came out for it?
We have worked with the industry in this bill and concur.
Okay, good. Further discussion, any other questions?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3411A goes to Senate floor due pass recommendation.
Senator Courtney moves House Bill 3411A and goes to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Other discussion? Objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Okay, I'll take this one unless anybody wants it. Thanks. Marjorie, are you just here for our rule changes?
Another bill.
So you have to stick around anyway, huh? Well, no, you have important things to do. You got another bill. Close work session. Open work session. House Bill 2756. John Miner, Alan Breckley, Diane Belt.
Good afternoon, Mr.
You guys ride a lot better than us truckers.
I'm Don Miner. I'm here on behalf of Oregon Manufactured Housing Association in support of House Bill 2756. This measure creates an alternative way to title a manufactured home that can be used when the title or primary ownership documents are not available. It was developed over a period of about a year by a work group that included ourselves, county tax collectors, the Department of Revenue, DMV, title companies. It mirrors the process that's used under Oregon's trust deed statute when those documents aren't available and a person needs to get them so they can record them. It requires use of a title company that's licensed in the state of Oregon. Upon satisfaction of a debt, the title company will make a demand upon the person who possesses the document. If those documents aren't forthcoming, the title company will go to DMV, submit a copy of the demand, an affidavit saying they made it, they followed the rules, and DMV will then treat the title as if it were unavailable. In the event something goes wrong, the title company is liable. There are amendments that are requested, the Dash 4 amendments. Those amendments were requested by DMV. The effect is to ensure that this process can be used on all manufactured homes, those in parks and those that aren't in parks. They also, the bill had on page 2, line 43, said that the title would be treated as if it were lost. The amendment would require that it be treated as if it is, that it is not available. They want to distinguish between titles of lost and those that aren't available.
Okay. And
that concludes my remarks.
Everybody's happy with the amendments. Senator Minnis?
Give me an example of when this happens, how often it happens, and why it happens.
A person buys a manufactured home and finances it through Bank One. Subsequent to that, they sell it to another buyer who finances it through Bank Two. Bank Two pays off Bank One and says, give me the title so I can go down to DMV and record the buyer's interest and Bank Two's lien. Bank One just never gets around to it.
Bank One never gets around to it?
Never gets around to it. Happens with real property under the trust deed statute, as my understanding is. Not. It happens with about the same frequency. They just don't do it. I mean, there's no mechanism in Oregon law to compel, at least in the case of a manufactured home, that Bank One tender those documents. And often they're out of state in any event. And it messes the system up. Counties can't record ownerships. Lenders can't record liens.
I thought the banks were paragons of efficiency. No?
Mr. Chairman.
Members of the committee, my name is Alan Brickley. I'm here representing the Oregon Land Title Association, and let me just suggest to you they are not.
Okay. Dave has left the room, I think.
Diane, who are you? What do you do?
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Diane Belt. I'm the personal property tax collector for Washington County, and I'm also a member of the Oregon Association of County Tax Collectors. We've been working very closely with this group. This problem came up to my attention about 18 months ago. We've been working on the solution for close to a year now. And it is a problem. It's a problem for the counties because the DMV is the official record that we use to transfer ownership on our records. When that doesn't happen, it creates a real burden because of the way we collect our personal property taxes. We actually issue a judgment when the taxes aren't paid. So
everybody's happy.
Everybody's pleased as punch.
Senator Courtney.
Mr. Chairman, the -4 amendments to House Bill 2756.
Senator Courtney moves the -4s to House Bill 2756. Discussion, objection, hearing none, so ordered.
Chairman of House Bill 2756 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Courtney moves House Bill 2756 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion, objection, hearing none, so ordered. Senator Minnis, you
have
a question?
Yeah, I did. That's the I'll carry it.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Closed work session, open work session, House Bill 3962. Or did I do that right? Nope, I've skipped over it. I didn't mean to say that. I meant House Bill 3641. That's right, yeah.
Again, greetings. Don Miner on behalf of Oregon Manufactured Housing Association. We're here to speak in support of this measure. House Bill 3641 allows the Department of Business and Consumer Services to consolidate manufactured home subaccounts into a general account. The effect will be to save about $70,000 in accounting costs. Over a period of years, well, manufactured home fees are required by law to be dedicated to a fund. Over the years, as different programs for manufactured homes have been created, various subaccounts have been created. That probably should be laid at the door of the lobbyists for that industry. It was probably an unwise decision, and we're here to correct it and streamline the system and save money.
And Joe, you handle this account? You're okay with this?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 3641 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cardy moves House Bill 3641 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Did we amend the bill?
I'm sorry?
A engrossed.
3641, A engrossed.
Okay, A engrossed. We didn't amend the bill.
No.
Sorry. I was just a sheep on that one, too, wasn't I? Yeah. Any other discussion? Objection. Hearing none, so ordered.
Thank you.
Let's see. Senator Brown, would you like to carry this? I'd be delighted, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Is that how I got that bill on the floor today?
That's right. One of the reasons, yeah. Closed work session. Open work session. Are we now down to 3962? Okay. Work session 3962. Representative Walker and D.J. Brandt. President Knope said he's in committee, I think.
Mr. Chair, Vicki Walker, State Representative, House District 41. Representative Knope, we're on in the floor session right now,
okay. And
he has a practice of not missing any floor vote, which I think is laudable, but he did tell me that I could represent that he's in full support of this bill, and I'll discuss that as we go on. Seated to my right is B.J. Brandt. She's the mother of my constituent, Andrea Brandt Amore, who lost her 9-month-old son, Rashid, in an unsafe crib accident in daycare this past September. Andrea became ill this afternoon and couldn't be here, but Ms. Brandt will be offering some testimony in her stead. I appreciate the chair's indulgence to hear this bill that we're calling the Infant Crib Safety Act. The purpose of this bill is to prohibit the remanufacture, retrofitting, sale, or lease of an unsafe crib. And an unsafe crib is defined in Section 4 of the bill, where we've taken that from Consumer Product Safety Commission and other areas of national standards. I had assistance in drafting this legislation from the Danny Foundation. It's a nonprofit organization founded in 1986 that to prevent injuries, conduct research, and provide leadership to set regulatory standards on infant products. Their primary mission, however, is to do education with the public about crib dangers and to eliminate the millions of cribs, that unsafe cribs that are in attics and basements. I've provided brochures to you from that foundation. The director, Jack Walsh, was here and testified in our Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs Committee in May. He's located in San Francisco and could not come up again today. The Danny Foundation is named after Danny Lineweaver, who at the age of 23 months was accidentally hanged in 1984 in an unsafe crib when his shirt became entangled on a finial post. We no longer make cribs like that. He suffered severe brain damage and incapacitation and later died at the age of 11.
So, excuse me, Representative Walker.
Yeah.
Consumer Product Safety Commission, they regulate new cribs, right?
New cribs, exactly, Mr. Chair.
This is used cribs. That's why we need a state.
Exactly. And that's part of what I was going to tell you is that is why we need this legislation.
People understand whether this crib they have is legal or not. How are we going to do that?
Mr. Chair, they are going to find that out because they can go to the Consumer Product Safety Commission website that lists that sort of information. They can also contact the manufacturer, and the manufacturer will be able to tell them. And we are going to do a massive public education campaign, and that was so awesome about this process that two of the members of the Consumer and Business Affairs Committee in the House are Representative Cliff Sonner and Representative Carl Wilson, both of whom are in the radio broadcast industry. They offered at the hearing to have Ms. Amore come and do a public service announcement with them that they will put on their the radio broadcast all over the state. We're also going to, the Health Division gave me some tips about free ad space in newspapers, so I'll be contacting the Newspaper Association about that. We're also, the Health Division publishes a booklet, the Newborn Handbook, and they sent a note to me the other day saying that we could dedicate one or two pages in this book if we can secure some funding for that, which I'll be talking to the Danny Foundation. So there are many ways. We also delay implementation with regard to this bill, with regard to individuals, in Section 10. You'll see that the operative date of the bill becomes effective July 1, 2002. So that gives us a phase-in period to educate the general public as opposed to the commercial users and the thrift stores who will know about this.
BJ, you have anything? Senator Menes, excuse me.
Well, go ahead and let BJ testify.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is BJ Brandt. I'm a grandmother. My one and only grandson, Rashid, died on September 1, 2000. He was 9 months old at the time. He was at his daycare provider's home. He'd been going to the same daycare provider for 6 months since he'd been 3 months old. The daycare provider was a very responsible person. My daughter interviewed a number of people before she chose this daycare provider. She was licensed and certified by the state to care for children. She was certified for CPR. Her husband taught CPR. They were a very safety-oriented family. They cared for three or four children, infants and toddlers, and they had a one-year-old baby of their own. The crib they bought in a secondhand store. They shopped around for the sturdiest, and it looked to be 2 to 3 years old, but we found out it was much older. It was sturdy. It didn't rock. It wasn't rickety. They purchased this taking it for granted that when you go to a store, even if it's a secondhand furniture store, that it would be a safe product, and it wasn't obviously an unsafe product, so the people purchased it. And my daughter also looked at it. Anyway, On the day that my grandson died, he had taken his morning nap in the crib. After lunch, he was put down for his afternoon nap. The babysitter checked on him. He was asleep. When she went back in 45 minutes later, he was dead. He had just learned to stand up and take his first steps holding on, and he would just giggle. He would stand up, take a step, and just laugh. He was about to walk. When he woke up from his nap in this crib, he stood up holding the rail, walked to the corner of the crib, and as he got to the corner of the crib, all of his weight was in the corner, and the mattress latch collapsed, and he fell straight down feet first. His head was stuck between the mattress and the crib. The mattress was against his mouth and his nose. He didn't take a breath or make a noise, and he died within a minute or two. The babysitter was in the next room with the door open. There was no noise to hear, and he died. And this crib was unsafe. It looked very safe. It was bought, it could have been bought in a garage sale. If somebody pays money for a product, whether it's a garage sale or a used furniture store, if they're going to take some money, they need to take the time to check for a recall and to check to see if a latch is broken or if something is taped together or glued together, because those are real simple things, and they need to take that responsibility if they're taking someone's money, even if they're taking $25. I mean, that's our job, is to protect babies because they can't protect themselves.
Thank you. Senator Minnis.
Here are a couple of questions. Actually, I think Representative Walker and I had some conversation about this bill and another one. This bill creates, in Section 6, a private right of action. And I want to make sure for the record that this private right of action is limited to the ability to enjoin or stop the manufacturer retrofitting sale, contract to sell, or reselling, leasing, or subletting of a crib. That does not say. In other words, it's not some private right of action that is less than a standard of negligence that might be allowable under some other tort theory.
Correct, Mr. Chair and Senator Minnis, and we did have that conversation about an earlier bill that we were trying to do on this. And this private right of action only applies to a commercial user. We will not allow folks to sue an individual who sells an unsafe crib at a garage sale.
All right, second question, is a commercial user defined? And well, I guess it is.
Yes.
Any person, firm, corporation, or association, or any agent, employee thereof. I guess the question is whether or not this includes 501c3 nonprofit like the Goodwill or some other organization of that nature.
Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis, that's a good question. I think I would have to ask legislative counsel if that would work.
I'm assuming it's your intent.
That is my intent, absolutely.
But
person, firm, corporation, a 501c3 is a nonprofit corporation. So I would assume that would.
What does it say, nonprofit corporation?
Well, it says corporation, and it doesn't say whether it's under page 1, line 26, Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis.
I know it says corporation, but it does not say nonprofit. So.
Correct, but I don't know that we need to make that distinction.
Well, I think it's a significant distinction.
Okay, if you.
But.
We'd like.
For the records, I don't know if I have somebody from the legislative council who's listening, but your intent is to include the Goodwills and the various stores that they're
absolutely
secondary.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Minnis, that's one of the problems that we have, is that thrift stores are selling these, including Goodwill, and Representative Zahner took, I gave him about 100 of the Danny Foundation brochures, and he took them to his local Goodwill store and distributed them.
Okay. So I have another question in addition to that. In Section 4, it says a commercial user may not, goes on to say, remanufacture, retrofit, so on and so forth. And then down below, I'm trying to figure, it talks about a standard of willfully or knowingly. Now, is that intended that in subsection 5, that willfully or knowingly sells, leases, is the standard necessary in Section 4? For the purposes of the private right of action in Section 6?
That question would have to be answered by Legislative Council, Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis.
Right. I mean, I think it is. I think they're supposed to be connected, which is why they're successful. I'm trying to state this for the record so that it's clear that.
I appreciate that. I'm just a fake lawyer. I'm
not a lawyer either, but I've been around lawyers.
Yeah. I'm a court reporter, and I've been around the legal system for over 20 years. But that question would be best left for a lawyer.
Yeah. Well, Senator Courtney's a lawyer. Any opinions, Senator Courtney?
I won't move the bill.
Yeah. I don't have any problem with the bill, except I do think it's important to make sure that this includes 501c3s and you know, entities created that are nonprofits.
Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis, would you suggest that I speak with Legislative Council?
I'm hoping that they're hearing us and somebody down there might come up and help us.
I am too, because we're getting farther along in the session and I'd hate to delay things. Charlie Cheek is the Legislative Council who helped me draft the bill. She's bringing him down.
Short recess.
Mr. Chair, if I could, I've passed out to you pictures of the crib that Rashid was sleeping in. It looks brand new. It was actually manufactured in the 70s, we've since found out. And what makes that crib unsafe is in the corner hinges, the S-hooks that hook the crib onto the hinge. They're easily dislodged, and that's why it's so important to inspect a crib each time you put an infant in it. Just before we walked down here, the House passed Senate Bill 436, which extended daycare inspections to all daycare registered daycare providers in the state, and I had testified on that bill and gave comment about that because the child care division in their booklets that they pass out to daycare providers didn't even mention anything about crib safety. So they are now going to be putting that on their checklist and informing daycare providers about the importance of checking those things. And also, the Mackenzie Willamette Hospital, Ms. Brandt sent this to me just recently in the May 2001 issue of their newsletter. They say, keeping kids safe, striving for zero, the only acceptable number of fatal crib accidents is zero. And they do a piece here, a public education campaign, on the need for crib safety. It really is an issue that we have a number of ways of getting at this to make sure that the information gets out to the public. There are also hotels and motels who lease cribs that they are defined as commercial users, and they don't know that they've got an unsafe crib. It's clearly a problem. Over 10,000 children a year are injured enough in a crib.
We're in a short recess. You can.
Okay. Yeah. I have to keep telling you. I'm just so passionate about this bill.
And the lawyer's on its way.
I know.
Just talk all the way through.
No, as a court reporter, I can't stand it when lawyers don't know when to shut up. So I guess I'll heed my own thoughts on that matter, and I'll just be quiet.
We believe you.